Hello. I see a lot of familiar faces and a few folks that I don't know. It's good to have you here. My name's Ben Shive, and I'll introduce myself a little bit more in a moment. Picture, if you will, I'm a record producer. Picture, if you will, I'm on the last few days of a record. It's time to go to mix, and we have already been working for a lot of time for not a lot of money. And I'm sitting at my desk awaiting the arrival of my artist, and he walks in and he goes, "Hey, I had a dream last night. And in this dream, I realized that we don't have enough songs on this record. And I woke up this morning at 5 and I wrote 2 new songs. And I still need us to go to mix in a couple days, but I want to add a couple songs to the project." And I go, just feel everything tense up. Okay, picture this. Here's the tables are turned. I am about to start writing. I do a lot of covers, and I write for orchestra a lot. So I'm about to start writing an orchestration of all things, the song "You Are My Sunshine," you know, which tends to be kind of a, you know, banjo-y little number. And I have this idea that what if it went real deep, and what if it was, you know, like a string arrangement, and I'm like, I kind of get in my flow state, and I have this lucky little pass of just on the first try playing down an orchestral strings intro to this song. And I've been around long enough to know that I kind of just nailed it on the first bit. And as soon as I finish, the artist sitting in the back of the room goes, "Man, that was great. What if it had a cello part that..." And I just go, "Here we go." Okay, so in the soul of everybody who makes anything, there are 2 chairs. And in one of them sits the artist, and in the other one sits the editor. And when you play, when you ideate, when you dream, that's your artist at work. And when you plan, and when you sort, and when you choose between, that's your editor. In the soul of everyone who makes anything, there's an artist and an editor. Everybody. That's all of us. In every collaboration, anytime, so you could draw the circle in one person's heart, or you could draw the circle around the whole room. And in every collaboration, there are 2 chairs. And in one of them sits the artist, and in the other one sits the editor. If you're throwing out a wild idea into the room, you're sitting in the artist's chair. And if you're trying to make a wild idea actionable, if you're trying to make it fit, if you're trying to make it make sense, then you're sitting in the editor chair. In every collaboration, there's an artist and an editor. And I'm so glad that we just heard the talk that we just heard, because this is, it's part of our God imaging. In the creation week, we see that God is generative. He's endlessly generative. Venus flytrap, alligator, Milky Way. He's just like, just ideating. And God is wise. There's the waters below and there's the waters above. There's the sun to govern the day and the moon to govern the night. There's 6 days of work and a day of rest. God is systematic. God is structured. God has a plan. So the artist and the editor are good. And that's because God is good and they image God. But as we also just talked about, sin mars God's image in us. And also, work is cursed. And therefore, this relationship between artist and editor within us and also in our collaborative work is it's broken, and really the artist and the editor chronically fail to understand each other, and they fail to honor each other. That's what happens every day. So I find that different personalities or collaborative cultures will tend to disparage one or the other. In my world, it's very with what we would call creative people, even though I believe we're all creative. We will tend to dismiss the editor as a buzzkill or a threat, not realizing that he's actually crucial to any creative endeavor, just as crucial as the artist is. And maybe in your work and in your world, the artist is seen as impractical, immature, weak, unregulated. You may find that. But your project is dead in the water without him. You need the artist real bad. So you have the artist and the editor. Within yourself, you have both of those. One of them may be especially strong in you, but you certainly have them both, like it or not. And your collaborations have both of those energies present, or they better. They need to, like it or not. So I want to convince you, it's really simple. I want to do two things today. I want to convince you within yourself and within your collaborations to nurture both of them, nurture the artist and the editor. And then I want to set before you a vision of the artist and the editor in collaboration. That's it, those two things. So let me pray, and then I'm going to kind of introduce myself a little bit more, and we'll go on. God, we do honor you as the creator before all creators, and it's just beautiful when our experience shows us daily, when we learn by experience who you are, what you're like, what you want for us. And I do pray that you'd help us to see what it is that you want for us. I pray that you'd show us something in ourselves and in the systems in which we work, so that we can bring order and good collaboration. And thank you for this time. Amen. Okay, so before we dive in, a word about me. So I live my professional life very aware of these dynamics. In my work as a record producer, I sit in a chair in a room with someone who is literally referred to as the artist. Like, that's the other person in the room is called the artist. Here's where it gets interesting. I do my best work when the artist allows me to be the artist. And they're willing to be the editor. That's when things really work. But you can imagine that when someone is called the artist and they walk into a room and have to become the editor, that there's conflict. There's conflict. And then it gets especially tricky because once they're willing to be my editor, suddenly I have to let them be my editor, and I don't want an editor. And so there's conflict every day. So most of the drama in my work life centers around the artist and editor and the dynamics between those. And then in my work as a songwriter, I see these roles play out in a more nebulous fashion, and it happens in the moment. And it can shift, and you have to be aware of it. Because on a typical write, you have two or three songwriters. Once again, there's usually a person in the room who's called the artist. But that doesn't mean that they always take that role. And often, everybody on the write has a strong artist and a strong editor. And that's what makes them a good songwriter. Anytime you're writing, there needs to be a structure and a thesis. Even if it's a song. Songs have theses as well. And so a great writer tends to be both of those things. And when that's the case, then often we can collaborate very well. But sometimes somebody has a very strong artist or a very strong editor, and the room has to adjust to that. And you have to be your antenna have to be up, and you have to be sensitive. And things can get tricky because the editor can crush the artist. Just crush them. Or somebody's got a really strong artist but an underdeveloped editor, and they can be hard to work with because everybody else in the room is just trying to keep them on the rails, keep them on topic. And we have to learn how to do this with sensitivity. So I'm thinking about these things all the time. Much of being a good songwriter is understanding what's going on in the room, who's sitting in which chairs, and being able to adjust. I'm happy to be in this room because, I see my friend Evan sitting over here, and I'm like, I wonder what these dynamics look like in his world. I know they exist in his world. It has to be a little different than mine, and I'm sure in some ways it's very much the same. So maybe you've never put words to these dynamics as you see them at play in your life. I hope you can teach me a thing or two about how they play out in your world. So let's go. So first I want to convince you within yourself and within your collaborations to nurture both the artist and the editor. Let's begin with the artist. Who is the artist? So Julia Cameron wrote a book called The Artist's Way, and she has this idea that she calls the artist the child, and I love that, and I think it's appropriate. And that doesn't mean that if you take the artist's role in a collaboration, you are a child. That's not what I mean. We don't treat artists like children. But it does mean that that's who's sitting in the artist chair inside of you. It's a child. And it's probably the child that you once were. And the artist is an explorer. He is the kid from Up with the aviator hat on. That's the artist. He's an explorer. Adventure is out there. Question, okay, let's discuss for a minute. What do children, like actual children, what do they do really well? What's great about children? What do they do well? Yeah, they invent things. Yeah, that's great. Oh, yeah, that's great. I didn't jot that down. I love that. What else?
Imaginative.
Inventive, imaginative. Yes. They are truthful. Yep. I wrote down pure. They're pure, they can't. Do what now? Yeah, yeah. Idealistic. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Say more about that. Give me one more sentence on that. Yeah. They're unsophisticated. That's good and bad, right? Okay, that's right. So what an artist does, a child's work is play. That's what artists do. They play. Children ideate, they explore, they invent names for places and things. They draw wild correlations because their brains aren't all about the structure. It's all about the exploration. It's about the free association. And the artist is honest and pure and curious, all the things we said. He's energetic. He's fiery. He's smarter than you think he is. He is figuring things out. He's agile. He's light on his feet. What do children not do so well? What are children weak at? Discipline is hard for children. They need someone else to help them do it. Yeah. What else? Patience is difficult. Yeah. Yeah. Regulating their emotions is very difficult.
Details.
Details. Yeah. Focus. Yes. Yes. Consequences. Yeah, they haven't been down the road of consequences. They don't know where things lead. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. So the artist's challenges are: he plays hide and seek. You scare the artist, you won't see him again for a while. He gets bored and he leaves. He uses all his energy and he collapses. He sulks when he doesn't get his way. He doesn't know how to structure his time. He doesn't know what's good for him. He doesn't come when called. He doesn't take criticism well. And if somebody hurts him, he can get really hurt. So why should you nurture him if he's such a child? it's because he's kinetic. He's dash incredible. He can go so fast if you'll just let him. If you'll just let him run, he will run so fast. He's a delight. He's full of surprises. Because when he feels safe, when he feels secure, he will get to work and you will have plenty of material to work with. That's why you should nurture the artist. He's so wonderful, even though he's so difficult. And how do you nurture him? I've got four things for you. I'm sure we could think of more, but here we go. You should nourish him. Okay, now let's remember, as we talk about these things, we should keep on zooming in and out. It's like in your collaborations, you should nurture the person who's sitting in the artist chair, but also within your own soul, you should be thinking, how do I nurture that creative artist child that I am? Because no matter what role you're in, you're going to need that character within yourself. You're going to need access to the artist. Even if you have the spreadsheetiest job imaginable, you're still going to need the artist. So here's what you do. You got to nourish this guy. You have to feed him new flavors, nourishing food. I don't know if these things are just things I think of because I'm a creative professionally creative person, but I think about stories, I think about visual art, movies, silence, time in nature, conversation, prayer, lovemaking, good food, exercise. Like these, you need to nourish the artist with experience and beauty. Here's another thing. You've got to give the artist agency. This has become a very, very important word to me. I think of agency as that ability to sit in the driver's seat and stay there, like the right to act out of your gut. You have got to find a place, if you want to nurture the artist, you have got to find a place for him to run as fast as he can. You need to give him the space to get into a flow state. Because that's where he can really win. You have to protect him. So nourishment, agency, protection. You have to make his world safe. You have to watch over him when he's with other artists, and you have to watch over him when he's with editor grown-ups. This is not the same as coddling the whole person, right? Any artist, like when we're talking about collaboration, any artistic person you work with is also a grown-up, and you can treat them like a grown-up. But when they're trying to bring the energy of an artist to the table, then you want to handle that energy with care. You want to make sure that it's safe. You want to put steady, firm constraints around him. He will act like he doesn't like the constraints, and then he'll test them. But when they don't move, when they stay steady, he'll be safe, and he'll settle in, and he'll thrive, and he'll do good work. Artists do work well when they understand the constraints that they're working within. And then they can bring that imagination within those constraints. Okay, so nourishment, agency, protection, and then I put training. What kind of artists do we want to work with or be? What kind of artists do we want to bring into a collaboration? And here's what I jotted down. Question. What's the difference between being childlike and being childish? What's the difference between childlike and childish? Say more about that. Yeah. That's right. That's great. To be childish is to not accept the boundaries that are put around you. Adults also have to accept boundaries put around them, right? Yeah. Any other thoughts about the difference between childlike and childish?
One is outward-focused.
Mm-hmm.
Childlike wonder out there.
Yeah. Okay, being outward or being inward. Yeah, I love that. So, yeah, self-aware versus selfish. That's right. We want to be childlike, and we want our artists to within us and our artists that we collaborate with to have that childlike thing where they are wonder, where they see the world and they see that it's big and it energizes them and they make things. But we don't want them to be childish in that they're unwilling to live within the constraints that are placed on them. So that's what we hope for them from the child. Let's talk about the editor for a minute. So who is the editor? You can guess that the editor is the grown-up. And that doesn't mean that if you take the editor role in a collaboration, then you're just a grown-up and you don't have an inner child. That's not what we're saying. We're all both of these things. But when we take that role, we become the grown-up. And it means if the artist is an explorer, then the editor is a guide. And the editor is many things. The editor might be a cartographer. He might fund the expedition. He wears many hats so that the artist can wear one. The editor has a heavy load. Let's talk about what grown-ups do well. What do grown-ups do well?
Responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, they can bear more responsibility. Yeah. Yeah. They can regulate their emotions. Yes. That's great. Yeah, that's right. They have experience. There was one from over. Yeah, they can make tough decisions. They can weigh options. Manage time, manage money. You know, that's right. That's good. So what the editor does, the editor's play is work. The editor actually has learned to like appreciate the value of just like keeping your head down and staying on task. The editor's play is work. He sees how it all fits together. He puts the made-up names that the child created on a map, and he makes sure it's to scale, right? He sees the structure. He creates systems. He knows where we've been. He knows what we've already tried. He sees the potential and can recognize what needs work. He constrains the artist. The editor says to the child, okay, I want you to take these 5 crayons, and I want you to go over to that spot between the window and the door, and I want you to draw whatever dragon you want. That's what the editor does. He says, this is where it goes, and this is what you can use. And then you can see how there's some freedom within that constraint. Okay, now I know what the rules are. As long as it's over there, and as long as it's these, as long as it's a dragon, I can draw it. After the artist has gotten bored and left, the editor stays behind and fills in the gaps. And what's he like? He's resourceful. He's committed. He endures. He's intellectual. He's experienced. He's savvy. He's great. The editor is great. The editor gets a bum rap, but he's great. What do grown-ups maybe not do so well at our worst? Maybe especially when we're relating to the child. What do grown-ups not do well? We've got some parents in this room. Enjoy the moment? Empathize. Yeah. Oh, man. That speaks to me because so many times as an editor, I'm going like, I'm managing myself. Why can't you manage yourself? Like, can't you just be self-controlled for a second? Yeah, it's hard to empathize. Yep. Sorry, say that one more time. Yeah, we tend to limit. We put limits, and limits are good, and then we make the limits tighter, or we don't relax them when it's time to relax them. That's great. Yeah, we can be condescending. Yeah, it's hard for us to listen. That's true. Okay, that's right. The editor's challenges are he struggles to be patient with the child. He's on a schedule. He's on a budget. He's worried. He wants control. He wants to control things to keep everyone safe. But the structures that keep everyone safe can also become suffocating. He has a universal theory of everything, but it's not always right. Why should you nurture him? Because he's how it gets finished. And he's how it stays in bounds, and he's how it makes sense. Because at best, he brings the best out of the child, and because the constraints he provides keep the child safe and free the child to create. And the right direction from him can actually energize the room, because it brings focus. So how do you nurture him? You nourish him. You feed him all the same things that you feed the kid, but you let him enjoy them from an editor's perspective. You watch the movie and you think about the elegance of the story arc. You go to the restaurant and you think about the simplicity of the menu, and you listen to the song and you think about the clever rhyme scheme, and you visit Paris and you think about the city plan or the garden plot. Structure is beautiful, balance is beautiful. The things that the editor cares about are art too. They matter. Agency. You see, the editor gets agency too. That the artist needs his time to flow, but the editor, you need to hand him the artist's work and say, have at it, do it, anything. Keep whatever you want, ditch whatever you want. And if you ditch something that's really, really important to me, then we can talk about that. But do it. Do your thing. It's important to give him space to take the engine apart and put it back together so that he can understand it, understand how it works. So the artist's work is sacred, but so is the editor's, and you've got to let the editor have his day. Responsibility, just acknowledge. So we said safety when it came to the child, but you got to acknowledge that the editor in fact has responsibility, so give him the dignity of just like naming it. It's like you wear a heavy, heavy is the head that wears the crown or whatever. It's like you've got a heavy thing that you're carrying. And so acknowledge that he's responsible for the artist and it's not the other way around, and he needs to understand the nature of the responsibility, but he should be honored for it and he should have the room to do it. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but the artist needs to recognize that. And then training. What kind of grown-ups do we want to work with or be? What kind of editor do we want to bring into a collaboration? I read, there's a book called So Brave, Young, and Handsome by Leif Anger, and he says, it is always good to have an old man on a journey because an old man has seen worse. And that's the kind of adults we want to be. We want to be ones who are good to have around because we go, oh, hey, I know things are looking bleak right now, but just trust me. We're right where we need to be. We're going to get to the end of this project. It's great to have an editor like that around. A great editor is going to be caring. They're going to care about the tone, and they're going to care about how they conduct themselves. They're going to be experienced, competent, humble, teachable, open. Okay, that's the artist, and that's the editor. So two, and I want to make sure we've got time for questions and or discussion, really. And we're done at 11, right? Is that right? Done at 11? Okay, so I think we will. I'm going to keep on trying to breeze a little bit so we'll have some time. Okay, so the sense I sometimes get from the people I work with is that if you want to make anything good, you have to get the editor out of the room. Maybe where you work, the popular wisdom is that you need to get the artist in his corner or in his room so that the grown-ups can sit down and get the work done. But I don't believe either of those, and I want to set before you a vision of the artist and the editor in collaboration. So in your head and in the room with other collaborators, I believe the artist and the editor need each other, and they're meant to be in relationship, and they just have to work on it. They need to get a little counseling and make it work. This time I want to talk to editors first. So the editor in dysfunction is a tyrant. That's the dysfunctional editor is a tyrant. He sees how the whole thing is supposed to play out, the budget, the schedule, the structure, the thesis, and the child comes into the room with chaos. The child is a chaotic element, and the child is a threat to the structure, so the editor does what? He takes control. And he can tend to put everybody in their place. And the problem is that the child scares easily. Once again, I just want to reiterate, I'm not saying that in collaboration, if you're collaborating with a creative person, they need to be treated like a child. We'll talk about that in a minute. But we're talking about the energy within them, the energy they're trying to bring into the room. And when you scare that thing away, it just takes a while before it comes back, if it does. So if I'm sitting down to write a Sunday school lesson, or if you're sitting down to come up with a business plan, or suggest a new way to arrange the office or something, you need your artistic self to sit down in the chair and start coloring. But as soon as he starts, I guarantee you, your editorial self is going to sidle up behind him, he's going to start reading over his shoulder, and he's going to begin formulating structures and then drawing conclusions. This happens within an instant. And then spotting problems, and within seconds, he's going to make a comment, and then eventually he's just going to be like, actually, why don't you get up and I'll just do it. That's what the editor is always going to want to do. This happened to me yesterday. I was on a mixed session yesterday, and for once, I'm not the culprit. Don't worry, I'm not the hero of my stories, but I'm not the villain of this one. So I'm in the room with the artist, and we're working with a mix guy. So we've handed the record over to him, and he's making mixes so that we can put this record out. He plays 5 seconds of this mix, and the artist starts going, hey, could you turn up the piano? And I just want to be like, bro, this man is an artist. He's trying to bring his artistry to us. Just show him the dignity of letting him play his whole mix for us before we start talking to him, right? That's what the artist was actually in editor mode then. And that's what the editor wants to do. He wants to let you get about 2 seconds into your flow state, and then he's like, wrong. And then we don't want to do that. Because the work suffers. It ends up being all grown up and no child. So in collaboration, you tend to tell yourself and your colleagues, you tell yourself your colleagues are grown-ups and they can take care of themselves, and that's true. You're not responsible for them. But when they bring any kind of artistry to the table, they're bringing a child to work. And when you scare that kid off, I don't know when he comes back. So you can protest and be like, well, Larry can grow up. And you know what? Larry should act like a grown-up. That's true. But the artist energy that Larry's trying to bring into the room, that's my dad's name, by the way. The artist energy that he's trying to bring into the room can't grow up by definition. It's only going to stay where it's safe. And so you're just going to have to deal with that. I'm on a songwrite with Sandra McCracken. Sandra is an artist that I collaborate with a lot. And she is artist through and through. I mean, she's got an editor because she's a human being, but like for her, the artist really, really shines. And what that means is she writes one line and it's beautiful, and I start to go. And then she writes a second one, and I go, okay, I can see the correlation between those two things, and now I know what this song is about. And then she writes a third one, and it's a totally different thing. And then she writes a fourth, and it's yet another. And I'm starting to go, okay, I don't have a correlation for all of this. Then what do I do, right? Because how many times on one songwrite can I say, Sandra, I'm sorry, but remember, we're writing a song about this. Can you, like, if I want her to stay in artist agency mode, then I have to be very, very careful how many times I remind her what this song is about. Because what if it's not about that? Like, what if she's going to take it somewhere else? Now, you can't always do that. Sometimes you're building a road, and it's got to be a road. You know, like, I'm sure y'all are on projects where it's like, well, I'm sorry, but the constraint is the constraint. But to what degree could I maybe learn to flex or wait? Because what I don't want to do is for her to go, oh, okay, I get it. Bye. And then I'm left to write the song by myself. So my editor is a grown-up, and so is yours, and grown-ups can find a way to regulate themselves for the sake of the child and for the sake of the project. So here are some things I think your editor could regulate. He could regulate his assumptions. Does the plan always have to dictate the work, or can the work ever dictate the plan? Can the plan ever flex because the work is good? Do you always know better than the artist about where the work is going, editor? I had this great conversation with Jason Miller, who's the children's pastor That's probably not his title, and I should know his title because I'm an elder, but don't ask me to remember it right now. But I asked him this. So he had kids, and then there were like 20 years passed, and then he had a kid, right? And so I was like, what was different the second time around? He's like, well, the first time around, we had this whole thing about obedience is doing what I ask when I ask it with a happy heart. And so the kid would get in bed, and if the kid got out of bed, we'd spank the kid. He's like, now the kid gets out of bed, and I get in bed with the kid, and I read a story. I was like, that's the editor flexing, just going like, maybe sometimes the constraints aren't everything. So maybe regulate your assumptions. Regulate your tone. You can be kind. You can just be kind. You can be direct. You should be direct. I hate, when I'm an artist, when I'm in the artist mode, I hate being coddled. I hate it when somebody's like, listen, I know you're going to be mad at me, but can we change the tempo? I'm just like, just ask me to change the tempo. I'm like, I can do that. That's fine. You can be kind, and you can give some dignity in the way that you communicate. You can regulate your timing. Actually, this is interesting. So I work a lot with Dave Heller. His wife is JJ Heller, and we do a lot of records together. And Dave and I spend so much time one-on-one, at like 7 months out of the year, just every day, all day, just he and I, imagine. We can start to get sideways every once in a while. And we have this plan we're going to try to implement where once every hour we take a break and we play basketball in a little doortop hoop so that I can get out of the flow state and he has the opportunity as the editor to say something. He can say something about where the arrangement's going. Now, he can speak up other times. The problem is sometimes he really shouldn't. Sometimes I am doing good work, and if he speaks up right now, I'm going to tense up, and it's somewhat justifiably so. The editor can decide when it's time to say something, and it just takes, it takes relationship. It takes some understanding. It might take some, like, hey, let's put a system in place for feedback. Yeah, please. I was just thinking this is probably something y'all know more about than me. Yeah.
There is power in the pause, like,
yeah,
on the editor's part, but is there also power in permission?
Not
necessarily being direct and interrupting, but saying,
yeah,
is this a good time to say something?
Yes.
Yeah,
we've talked a lot about this, and I think that there really, for me, when I'm in artist mode, there is a lot of power in permission. Just going like, we'll talk about sort of training up the artist in a minute, but like something I've had to learn to do when I'm in artist mode is to just go, hey, can I have a second? I'm in the, what you're hearing right now, like, you know, if you're writing a horn arrangement, and you write the trumpets first, they might go, oh, it's so brash. And then it's like, no. Once I put the French horns and the trombones in place, you're going to feel that it's not brash at all. It needs that color. But you're not going to hear that for 20 minutes. So I need 20 minutes. Like, yeah, so I think there is some, like, the more we communicate, the more we can kind of go, like, you totally have the right to edit me, but not yet. If that's okay. Yeah, so that's good. There you go. So the editor has a responsibility to regulate the artist, but first he has to regulate himself. He has to regulate his expectations, his tone, his timing, so that he can give the artist a safe environment and as much agency as possible. And that's how you get the best out of that collaboration. Artists, and then this is a few more minutes and we'll be ready to discuss. So the artist in dysfunction is a punk. And I know because I have been a real punk, and you can ask my clients. He's in a flow state, and he's trying to get into one, and he gets interrupted by somebody who has every right to interrupt him, or he gets questioned by somebody who has every right to question him, or he gets constrained by somebody who has every right to constrain him, and he goes into a sulk or a snit, and he just becomes intolerable. Here's another one because I've been on the receiving end of this. A producer is a project manager. Oh, no, I already said this. This was not going to be my intro. But yeah, the thing I started with about the artist who comes in and goes, I had a dream. It's like, that's so frustrating. It's like, how can we have any peace if the scope of the project can change at any minute based on the whim of an artist? Because he won't submit himself to the agreed upon constraints that we have. I've lost so much peace and security in my life from unregulated artists. making my life uncontrollable and unknowable, that when I see one coming, I run. I will not work with an artist who can't regulate themselves anymore. I can't work with it. The artist in dysfunction, or not who can't regulate themselves, but who won't submit to regulation, if that makes sense. The artist in dysfunction shows no respect for the grown-ups in the room, and he makes their work intolerable. They're a drag. Grown-ups are a drag, and they might be, and they should work on that. But the bottom line is the artist is answerable to them. The editor is going to have to assemble the whole thing and put it out into the world, and the artist is going to have food on his table because of that. And so show some respect. So here's a word to the artist child, and it's submit. Accept constraint. Submit to constraint. We ask the editor to regulate himself, but I think the call to the child is to let the editor regulate him as well. Also, submit the work to the editor. Hand it over. Don't be artist within the self, you know, dealing with the editor within the self, but then also artist in collaboration. Don't be so precious about your work. Just make it and let it go and let the editor bring it to order. That's what editors do well. The work will be stronger for being brought to order. So hand it over. And then don't be afraid. That's different. That doesn't fall under the category of submit. But that's one thing I would want artists to know from experience. I can tell you this. There's like, I think great artists, they have like a little cockiness. And it comes from this. It's like this. I go, okay, I just spent the last, you know, hour writing a string arrangement. And then you told me you didn't like it. Don't worry. I've got another one. Like, it's that. It's like, that's because that's what the artist kid does. He just, you knock it down. He goes, well, I'll build another one. I got another one in me all the time. So, like, just know, like, you know, as you try to constrain the artist and ask the artist to submit to the editor, it's not going to be the death of him. Because as long as the editor is kind about it, just direct, like, you know what? I actually don't want drum programming on this song. Okay, we'll do another thing. Like, you just find that there's more there. So, in conclusion, the artist and the editor, in collaboration, have an incredible capacity to help each other. Their gifts complement one another so that the artist's endless explorations find their best expression through the editor's structures and plans. Whether it's inside of you or in your collaborations with other people, the work is at its best when the editor regulates himself to make room for the artist while the artist submits to the editor's constraint and trusts the editor to bring the work to order. So that's what I have. Any comments or questions? I really do want to hear from you. Yeah. Victim mentality. Yeah. Yeah. That's a million-dollar question to ask me, because I will tell you honestly that there comes a point where you have to go, I can't plug the hole in somebody else's bucket. Like, if somebody's got trust issues, I just don't know what can happen, like what can be accomplished. I suppose if you have no choice, that's a good question. Victim mentality. I don't know what you can do other than just be the best editor or artist that you can be and leave it on their side of the street to learn over time that you're on their side. Oh, you know, I worked with an artist a number of years ago who, it was their first record, and they were very, very precious about everything. And we went to a tracking session, and I realized they were treating every person I had hired on that tracking session, like a bass player and a drummer and a guitar player, like they were villains, like they were trying to steal my songs and take them somewhere I don't want them to go. And I just had to, on the ride home from that session, be like, hey, buddy, everybody we bring into the room is an ally. You're going to have to learn how to trust other people, because no one has any motive to make your music bad. Everyone wants it to be good, and everyone wants you to like it. That's how they get hired again. So there might be some coaching to be done where it's like, hey, you're going to have to learn how to trust other people, and people are in it to help you. I hope that's true. I hope that they're not actually a victim. I don't know how to fully answer that question, because that sounds like a whole course. Yeah.
Come on.
This is by the editor, by the judge.
Mm.
And it seems like a crushing blow to their artistry.
Yeah.
But the editor, the judge says, you have another song.
Uh-huh.
And they rise up in that moment. They take the editorial.
Yeah.
They go to their creative side. And
yep.
What comes next is the best thing.
Mm. Yep.
It's not that the editor and that the judge in that situation is not gloating, but almost is so happy for that artist in that moment.
Yeah.
So apply that to work.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes down to like accountability, measurable transparency and honesty, and then celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we need to celebrate success and wins more. But that accountability, the structure, but the creative process.
Yeah.
Working together. You said it so well. It's like they need each other. When it works, it's amazing.
I love that idea you just said of being able to step back. And it's that thing we talked about a minute ago of like, and he saw that it was good. It's like when those two characters can get together at the end of the day and go, we did something good, didn't we? That's pretty awesome. Yeah. Any other questions or thoughts or insights? Yeah. Okay, wait. Okay. So if I was in the editor chair and I crush somebody. Yeah. I love that. I've had to do this a lot. I really have, just over and over. I think actually my artist is meaner and more unself-controlled than my editor. I feel like I actually can do a pretty good editor. I do feel like there's something real good about just like making light of yourself, being like, man, because, you know, I've definitely had the thing where like somebody plays me, you know, at the start of a record, they play me all the songs. And I have to give my top of the head, you know,
Yeah. This
is what I think. And then a few days later, they go, I'm sorry, but I still want to keep that that song on the record. And that's when I have to capitulate. And it's important for me to go, oh man, listen, I don't know anything. Like, I'm just trying to give you, I got to give you something off the dome. I hope it didn't hurt your feelings. I do feel like there's something good about making light of the editor and just recognizing your like fallibility in the thing. I do feel like there. I don't know how you got to word it, but I do know that every time that I had one where I just got so cantankerous in the artist chair, and the next morning I just had to be like, "Hey, so you remember what happened yesterday?" And just like, "Here's how I got there." You wouldn't give me an inch, but also, you know what? You pay my paycheck every month, and you don't have to give me an inch if you don't want to. So, I want you to like working here. And every time I have a conversation like that, it goes well. Like, people in general, who, if you can trust them, like if they're not just like a total monster, they're like eager to hear that apology from you. I don't know. I bet you can't go wrong. Sorry if that's not specific enough. Yeah. 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 Okay, since that's a little off topic, I'll just give you 2 minutes on that. Here's what I believe. I think the sooner that we can get over how convincing it is, the better. It's just math. It's not even magic. It feels like a magic trick. It's not even that. It's math. And I think we got to go. I think we have an amazing opportunity because of AI to ask what art really is. And I actually don't believe that's art because there's not an artist. So the triad with art is beauty, and AI can do beauty. Truth, and AI can do truth by learning the truth from the internet. But the third thing in the art triad is honesty. And AI can't be honest because AI doesn't have a perspective. AI is not alive. And so we should expect that AI can make a pop song that's better than the best pop song that a person can make. But ultimately, it doesn't matter because it's not art. And it doesn't matter because it doesn't have a story and it doesn't have a perspective. And so I think the sooner that we can just go, okay, yeah, that's a song that AI made. Of course it's amazing because AI can just do the math on what is a great pop song. It's ultimately mathematical. Boom. But it doesn't matter because art is about imaging God, and only people can image God in that way. So that would be my short on that. I wouldn't want to take the fun out of it. It's like, okay, that's a catchy song. Like, it sounds amazing, and the vocal's perfect. Everything about it's perfect because it's math. Yeah, hope that's helpful and not too cynical. I feel a little cynical about it. Yeah. Yeah, yes.
Okay. I appreciate this analogy that you're drawing from the music industry because that's kind of the mystery behind the curtain kind of stuff that you're talking about.
Sure.
In commercial real estate, I think that's really a great analogy.
I want to hear how, yeah.
And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I mean, when it's done properly, and here's what I mean. When you're in real estate and you're looking around for pieces of land for a particular tenant, and this is, just call this the artist side.
Yep.
And so that's kind of where I start. And so you have to find the piece of land, you think it'll work, but the tenant requirements over here are a really long list of things, okay? And then you get the land, it's under contract, and then you meet with your architect, and he kind of has an idea. But then you meet with your civil engineers, and they also have input. So you have this piece of dirt, but it has all these characteristics to it that have to work together and blend together to make it work. And
yeah.
That's what I mean by that. There's all kinds of ratios that come in impervious area, non-pervious area. Then you have to know, am I required to put in detention? Or can I put it underground? And the tenant wants a drive-through or stacking lane with cars. All those kind of metrics. So imagine a room where the artist kind of guy. I find the site for whomever, Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
And you have to have this collaboration of all the editors.
Yep.
They come into play. And
constraints on constraints. Yeah.
Because the collaboration needs to be more immediate. In real estate, you're trying to vet, does this site work? And so you have to bring in all the editorial comments from all your consultants and your experts to know whether or not the first artistic element will work for the Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Because they aren't like one of these or such and such and such and such. And then you get this, collaboration quicker, and then you know what the end product's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all these entitlement processes, things like that. But I thought it was a real good analogy. It's actually the only analogy that I can give you authentically and say, what a great marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You have worked with over the years to vet something immediately where you get the artist.
Yeah.
And the other.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, that's awesome. Gosh, like one thing as a self-employed person and somebody who works in the situations I find myself in, I never get to be a part of like a team where I have a role that's very specialized and specific. And I'm sure sometimes that would feel very constraining and frustrating, but I think there would be something nice too about being like, I'm the editor, and this is the part of the process at which I come in, and to learn how to do that a little better every day, learn how to phrase whatever edits I have in the most helpful, clear, direct way. No, but we did that on our elder team, and it was so funny because there's me, and then there's this finance guy named Brian Jacobs. And the working genius thing is kind of like, how well do you start, and how well do you do the middle bits, and how well do you finish? And I'm like, I start off with a bang, and then I'm like, boo! Like, my finishing energy is so difficult. And then Brian Jacobs was the opposite. It's like, he can't get it started, but he can finish anything. I was like, man, we could go places together. Yeah.
Editor.
Yeah.
Everybody has all six working
genes. Yeah.
It's where do you get your energy?
Yeah.
Creativity.
Yep.
And what dreams are
that? Yeah. Well, you know what? I had that yesterday. Like, I told a bad story on the guy who was artisting yesterday when we were in that mix session, because he is a strong editor. But you know what? I was so grateful because I am the worst at mix. By that point, I don't care anymore. Don't tell my artists. But it's hard for me to want to care about finishing a thing. And I was so grateful to have this guy in the room who was like, you know, even though he could be overbearing and very like overly principled, man, he just worked tirelessly for hours on this really complicated arrangement that I had written, and he made it sound amazing. And if it had only been me, the arrangement would be amazing, but it wouldn't sound amazing on the record because I don't have the energy to finish it. Yeah, I do, because I think it's so evident in the kind of rooms that we're in.
It's important that you have common language that you can talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, really, like, man, I just think about all the songwrites where, here's an example of like editor artist energy on a songwrite. So if I've got an artist who's a great singer, and singers have a certain sensibility about melody that's just innate. But if they're not instrumentalists, they don't often know what they're doing. So I'm a piano player and a very like ear-trained piano player. So as soon as they sing a melody, I memorize it and I put it in numbers in my head. So I'm like, okay, it's 1, 7, 5, 6, 3, 2. I know it and I will never forget it. And the next time they play it, they're going to play it a different way. And then I have to decide, do I remind them? Or even worse, if I wrote them, here's where it really hits the road. If I sit down and I write a melody, but what I want is for the artist to love their song and they're a singer like I described, when I get up from the piano and let them sit down and play it, they'll go, hey, how did that melody go? And I will lie. I will say, I don't remember, because I want them to write the melody. I know that I need them to have that artist agency of like, I sat down and I did the thing, because that's how you get the brilliance. So I'll pretend not to know things. I'll pretend not to remember what the second verse was, because I just want to see if I can trick them into the space where they go into their artist mode and they just make stuff. Because if I can trick them into that, then we can get something brilliant. And I can always go back as my editor brain later and be like, the first version we wrote of this melody was way better, and I still remember it. But what can I do? Okay, so I think we're done. Thank you. That's a great way to end it. All right, thank you guys.